This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, first off, markets, Philip.
Yeah, mixed day in the US. The Dow was down 0.2%. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ, though, up 0.1%. But over across in Asia, I think taking the cue from the previous day in the US, all red. Nikkei was down 1.1%. Hang Seng negative 2.1%. Shanghai down 0.6%. STI Singapore down 1.4%. And also back home, FBMKS here, down 0.7%.
Yeah, so for some insights into what's moving markets, we have on the line with us Carlos Casanova, senior economist at private bank UBP in Hong Kong. Good morning, Carlos. Now, FOMC minutes seem to be dictating direction of market, and they're indicating that they're likely to be tapering towards year end on the back. But at the same time, we are also facing inflationary pressures. What are your views on these two issues?
Good morning. So we are definitely seeing the FOMC minutes moving the markets very clearly. Remember earlier last year, the FOMC said that they are looking for inflation to exceed 2% and unemployment to be under 5% for a significant period of time before tapering. Well, it seems that inflation has effectively exceeded 2%. It is on a seasonal factor, so it will face opposite pressures next year, meaning that inflation could go down next year before the vast majority of this year and the first quarter of next year, it will exceed 2%. And unemployment now at 5.4% is almost full employment. So that starts or initiates the conversation about tapering, with most members of the FOMC expecting to taper the pace at which the Fed buys its bonds, which is currently $120 billion. Before the end of the year. So we could see a technical taper before the end of the year.
But at the same time, Carlos, it seems like markets are increasingly worried about the Delta variant in the US and the rise of hospitalization cases. Do you think that that might put a foot stop to what the Fed might do, or at least cause them to pause for a moment?
Right now, it doesn't seem so, because of course the Fed, the US has moved away from counting cases towards looking at hospitalizations. It is possible that if we see a larger number of hospitalizations, that might dent sentiment and in turn drag a little bit on activity. And that, of course, would mean that the decision has to be postponed. But I think the momentum is pretty solid behind the FOMC decision.
Carlos, can I just get a perspective, right? How do you think Asian markets will respond to the first round of tapering?
Well, it's as we have seen since the minutes, Asian markets will respond negatively. Taper in the US is going to lead to upside risks on the 10-year yield. Of course, the US Treasury 10-year yield right now is very low, but as the Treasury stops injecting liquidity end of this month, and with this conversation on tapering, it is possible that we will see that heading upwards towards 1.6, 1.8% in the remainder of the year. And that will likely translate into downside risks for Asian EMs, both on the equity and, of course, on the foreign exchange fronts.
So at the same time with that, will we see US dollar strengthening then as a shift towards DM?
We are seeing currently a lot of US dollar strength. And although long-term we are not US dollar bulls, we think that there are structural factors that support long-term US dollar weakness. Within the context of this tapering conversation, we will expect to see a strong US dollar for the remainder of the year.
And you know, shifting perspective to China, July's activity indicators not really good. What does it say about the economic growth in the mainland? Are we slowing down or is it just a blip?
No, in fact, we revised our GDP forecast for this year from 8.6% to 8.2% for 2021 and 2022, expecting slightly weaker 5.0% instead of 5.5%. Now, there are three main factors driving this. Of course, we saw an outbreak of Delta in the country. We also saw significant flooding in central China in July and also in August, and that is going to translate into even weaker activity indicators heading into August and into Q3 21. But of course, the all-important regulatory reforms is dragging on sentiment. It's led to a sell-off in equities, and that's going to have implications for consumption through wealth effects. So all in all, we are looking at slower growth momentum in the second half.
Meanwhile, China also banned commodity futures speculation, which led to this steep correction in iron ore prices. So apart from that, what other resource commodities can exert an outsized influence on prices then?
Mm-hmm. Well, we are seeing some concern about producer price inflation, which was 9% last month. It hasn't really translated into consumer price inflation, which was subdued, and it will remain below 1.5% because they've been putting in place all of these policies to prevent upstream prices to trickle down into downstream prices. Of course, that means that they've banned speculating on iron ore futures, and we've seen a collapse in iron ore prices. That was mainly possible because China is the largest producer of steel in the world, and it's also the largest consumer of iron ore as a result. So they are sort of a price setter in a sense. But there are other commodities that are equally important. Of course, semiconductors is a big one. And although they have been trying to use regulation to control the price there, because it's a supply chain issue, it's unlikely. It's not like commodities where financial forces play a stronger role with semiconductors, unlikely that they can do much to change the price. But agro commodities, so food, is another thing that's very important in China. And luckily there, they have a bit of head of a tailwind because pork prices were very high last year, very low this year. So that is also contributing to this sustainable CPI level or consumer price inflation level in China this year.
And shifting southwards to ASEAN, we are seeing varying vaccination rates. And one particular area of concern is Indonesia and Thailand, where really the vaccination rates are still quite low, single digits really for double vaccinated. You know, in your view, which of the economies will recover fastest and which ones will recover the longest then?
So we are seeing a bit of a divergence in ASEAN. On the one end of the spectrum, you have Singapore, with 80% of the population vaccinated soon. They're talking travel bubbles with different people. Even if Hong Kong is not reciprocating, they are opening that line for Hong Kong people that want to travel to Singapore. So really looking to reopen. And then you have Thailand and Indonesia, two economies where you have very high COVID cases exceeding 20,000 in the last couple of weeks per day, but also very low vaccination rates. So unfortunately for emerging markets in ASEAN, it will take longer to reopen. And in the two places where we see most risks are Thailand and Asia for two different reasons. Well, vaccines are, of course, very low in both cases, but in Thailand, you have a very domestic-oriented economy that's very dependent on tourism. So that's going to be difficult to restart going forwards. And in Indonesia, it is a little bit more balanced, but still consumption accounts for a large proportion of GDP. But the real issue with Indonesia is, you know, they really can't do much on the policy front. So we saw Bank Indonesia leaving rates on hold this week. Because the rupiah has been such a poor performer this year, they are concerned about potential outflows in the context of a Fed taper that could lead to financial pressures in the country. So unfortunately for Indonesia, they just have to power through this next few months, even if it comes at the cost of economic activity.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong, giving us his views on the global markets. And I think he ended the conversation on ASEAN. And interestingly, the two markets which will probably have delayed recoveries are Thailand and Indonesia, both, of course, impacted by the low vaccination rate, but they also have their own respective domestic problems.
Yeah, I think that's the dual speed you see a problem. And, you know, one example that Carlos was talking about was Singapore, where just yesterday they basically revised their whole travel restrictions, and they actually now created a travel lane with Germany, right, where you don't need to be quarantined between Singapore and Germany. And so this is really an interesting move to a kind of a mini travel bubble scenario. So the Singapore government has come out, they've relaxed quite a bit in terms of travel entry into Singapore. Malaysia's still not there. But this is a sign of a dual speed economy in ASEAN, in my view.
Yeah, but by the way, hasn't Hong Kong and Singapore decided not to proceed ahead with their respective travel bubbles? I think they couldn't get to some agreement. But I think it's a conversation we'll continue. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.